Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Something new. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Imprint Companion, the only podcast on the Australian interwebs that is stoking the flame, nurturing this torch of DVD culture straight from these mics into your ears. I am one half of this show, Blake Howard. The other half, the beautiful Greek god himself, is my dear friend, Alexi Toliopoulos. Alexi, welcome back to our discussions of all things physical for the beautiful Blu-ray label Imprint Films.
I am certainly feeling that warmth of the golden flame of physical media today as we discuss something that is always exciting, tantalizing, and quite often impressive. We're talking about a freaking boxed set today on the podcast. Us physical media nerds absolutely adore the concept of a box set. Multiple films, one package, something comprehensive is afoot.
And what us film nerds love even more is when there can be two, where there can be exciting slipcases. There can also be exciting inserts. Some that have double titles and two movie covers on each side, and you have to open it up, removing the disc to see what special features are in hand. And this is a beautiful and exciting buffet that we have in front of us today.
Absolutely, yes. We are talking about Silver Screams Cinema. This is a box set of some B-movie horror films from the 1940s. This is a new box set from Imprint. And one thing that you've already hit on, we're talking about the actual physical package. It comes in those beautiful ViaVision Imprint hard boxes with that little pop-off lid, and all the discs are safely held inside your plastic slip covers as well. And then what you hit on that I really, really like about this, you get so many box sets where there's multiple films but only one case. And then the case itself is a decider of like which film are you displaying with the case, because it's like a reversible sleeve situation where you're displaying one film and then the inside of the case is the other film, and you can flip the sleeve around which way do you want it. I like that this has got on one side, it's got the both, like if you pull the whole paper sheet out, you got that A4 piece or whatever.
Now I'm going into I love it.
Describing something. You get the A4 sheet out, whatever it is, and then on one side, it's got the two front cover posters, and then on the inside, you've got those blurbs. And I like that you don't have to make the decision which one is on display. It's very elegantly done, and it surprises me. I've never seen this shit before, because it seems like such a no-brainer
decision. I'm just going to say the same thing. I had never seen it until this box, and it's so smart. A great spine design of the double with the imprint spine number, and then flip. Either side is just movie poster, so it's all killer, no filler, and
no
just
filler.
Such a great decision. We have six films made between 1944 and 1957 to cover today. Alexi and I have split this box set for you. We're going to talk about them. They come in three sets of double films. So I'm going to talk about disc one, which covers The Phantom Speaks and The Vampire's Ghost, which is imprint spine number 54. Phantom Speaks comes out, came out in 1945, and The Vampire's Ghost, also another 1945 movie. We'll cover those momentarily. We then dump into disc number two, which Alexi is going to cover Return of the Ape-Man and Valley of the Zombies. Return of the Ape-Man, 1944, Valley of the Zombies, 1946. And then we jump a little farther ahead in time for disc number three, which is She-Devil and The Unknown Terror. She-Devil and The Unknown Terror, both made in 1957. So, let's dive into The Phantom Speaks. if you've never seen this bad boy, it is at the time, at the end of World War II, there is this, I want to call it like a psychic flux where America particularly, definitely Europe, but America particularly and Europe were facing this existential quandary, which was like, we've just, you know, Europe is destroyed. What is the world going to be? And while this time was about to be booming in America, and it was this sort of like this, you know, American industrial complex in full swing and all this post-war prosperity, people started to like think of like, this is the time you see religions emerge. This is the time where you see like the master, Paul Thomas Anderson's film about the emergence of Scientology was set. And so The Phantom Speaks is about this psychotherapist who thinks he can communicate with the dead, and there's this creepy killer who murders someone to get back at them for some form of reprisal, and he gets sentenced to death in the electric chair. And this physician says to him, "Look, you've got the strongest will I've ever seen in my life. If you can maybe maintain your spirit, you can stay in our realm while your body dies." And so The Phantom Speaks is about this spirit that comes back, possesses this doctor because he's kind of given him the tools on how to possess people, and brings him back to life. And he starts to kind of exact even more vengeance beyond that. And it's kind of a weird and wonderful like possession movie, but the stakes are not like devils, and the stakes are not these crazy large things. What they are these kind of quaint and cute, like weird, I've got to exact vengeance because there was a witness in my case and I'm going to kill them, and who knows if there's anything bigger. And it's this kind of like time where, you know, and for anyone who's listening, like the Phantom Speaks goes for basically just over an hour. Like, it's a really brisk running time. It feels like a more like a Twilight Zone episode. It was a really kind of fun and weird, almost like, let's see how close we can get noir to horror and a body possession horror and with all old timey effects. And so it was kind of cute and weird, and that was my experience of The Phantom Speaks.
Far out. That sounds kind of cool. Almost, can I say, your description of the plot of like these mixed stakes, like supernatural mixing in, it almost sounds like, reminds me of like what I would hope a Coen Brothers movie could one day be, with a little bit of a supernatural element and a little bit of like a low stakes crime noir plot. I'm like, this one sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, I think you might get a lot out of this because of like that complete blend of genres that maybe doesn't work. So you can see that it like might not have fully been fleshed out, might not have completely worked. And I think the short running time helps with the concept not quite coming off, but definitely a good one to kick off this box set. The next one, though, is one that I really want to talk about, and it is the second film on this. It's called The Vampire's Ghost. It stars John Abbott, Charles Gordon, Peggy Stewart. It's made in 1945. And we like to think of this contemporary thing of like vampires walking around in the daylight, you know, they're totally fine, or playing around with the rules of the Dracula vampire is a very contemporary thing. We are completely wrong. This 1945 movie basically posits, imagine you've got this guy who is... I want to say he's like a Rick from Casablanca type running a bar in some weird African country. And
oh, man.
And he is a vampire. And so what happens is the tribal folk in this fake African country called Bakunda, sounds a little bit like Wakanda, but it's Bakunda.
Okay.
They start to drum their tribal drums and do all these tribal dances because they can feel that this evil presence has descended upon Bakunda. And in fact, it's this guy who's kind of got like a Dracula-like charm and really kind of finds the degenerates in the bar in this local town in this sort of post-war period and uses them to kill them. And he starts turning people into vampires. He himself is a vampire. And It's actually kind of rad. I really liked this movie. It was so quaint and cute, very specific, and it basically the only thing that it stuck to in the vampire mythology is this idea of like crosses and silvers. But this was a guy who could totally and completely blend into society, and so it was this really cool thing. I had a few other little touches that I won't spoil, but man, it was a funny little thing. And the real cute factoid about the vampire's ghost is that there was actually a company, and it ran from 1935 to 1967. They talk about it in the commentary track on the film, which is called Republic Pictures. Now, Republic Pictures made huge movies with people like John Wayne and Gene Autry and Roy Rogers. They even did a Macbeth film directed by Orson Welles in 1948. Oh, so
I love that version of Macbeth. Yeah,
it is a great one, right? So they actually were kind of a prestige movie house, and this in this time was one of their rare dalliances with horror, and then they just threw it off the slate. And so that became a really fascinating part of the commentary track for me, and actually kind of made the entire thing worthwhile. The commentary track is Tom Weaver and Gary Rhodes. It kicks off with Tom Weaver and moves into Gary Rhodes later on in the bit, but the Republic Pictures connection was so cool because then I just found myself diving down a Republic Pictures rabbit hole. So out of this disc, Vampire's Ghost for me, because, you know, as a cinephile, that like hyperlink essential thing that happens when you're a cinephile and going down the rabbit hole really was like top notch for the Vampire's Ghost.
And I think there is something in that I'm fascinated by and very much drawn to in, and maybe it's because of like an Indiana Jones factor.
Yes.
Of these ideas of like exoticism in like 1940s and 1930s, B movies, fantasy films, horror films, science fiction films. There's this idea of exoticism of like going to these lands in the far off East or like far off into Europe, like these mystical lands that don't exist. That I just find really, like, you know, obviously there's problematic things, issues in those as well.
It's going to be as culturally insensitive as its time permits. And I think you have to kind of, it is fair to be objective and judge it according to our eyes. But I don't think you're ever going to find anything that is worthwhile if you're so harsh that you can't even allow a representation that is outdated to happen. I just think that, you know, some of the best things to learn from are those things that are so completely outdated and wrong by contemporary standards. So,
And it's one of those things as well, like, because I love fantasy so much. Like, I love, like, big fantasy movies so much. Like, going back and seeing what in the 1940s people considered to be a fantastical realm is so different to the way that we see it now. And I think there's part of that idea of exoticism that I will always be drawn to when we look at these old movies.
Yes.
Because it is, like, production design. It is all these things of trying to embrace these things to create something beyond the understanding that we currently have.
Yes.
And it's so quaint to go back and see how they would do it back then, especially in like a little bundle of films that we're discussing today where they are quite small and low budgeted, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. No super special effects, some mirror tricks in The Vampire's Ghost, in The Phantom Speaks, some beautiful fade outs and superimpositions and things like that, but nothing too crazy. I love the lo-fi of it all. I think there's just such a cuteness to it. But let's dive to disc number 2, Imprint Spine number 55, my friend. Let's go to some Bela Lugosi and some Return of the Ape Man.
When we got assigned this box set, this was the one that I called out first because I absolutely love movies about prehistoric man and cavemen, and seeing Return of the Ape Man as a title, I'm like, okay, this is hitting on something for me. And this stars two absolute legends of the silver screen. In particular, the silver scream, we've got Bela Lugosi as Professor Dexter and none other than John Carradine as Professor Gilmore. So we've got two icons in there in these leading roles. And this is basically when kind of mad scientist experiment, they bring back to life the frozen body of a prehistoric ape man that they discover on an expedition, but you don't really see much of the expedition. This is one of those kind of movies where there's a lot of shots of newspaper headlines that you would see back in the day, and full lingering shots where you have to read an entire like front page of a newspaper. But what they try to do, their science experiment, is they try to implant a normal human living brain inside the body of this ape man to create like a superhuman. And I think this one is even though it's only like 59 minutes long, these are both the ones I'm talking about today are quite short.
Very short.
I think beyond seeing Bela Lugosi and John Carradine in something like this, because they're like absolute magnets of the fucking silver screen. Like you can't.
Yeah.
Take your eyes off them. They're so fascinating to watch, even when they're like phoning it in like they are in something like this. It just didn't quite do enough to capture my imagination the way that you spoke so nicely about the vampire's ghost doing. Didn't quite get there for me, but you know, you're getting two absolute icons. How can you not include them in a box set of the silver screen? On the other hand, however, on my other flip of the disc on this one, I did really quite enjoy this little movie called Valley of the Zombies. And this is an interesting movie because you have a preconceived notion of what zombies are.
Yes.
We've got a very much a 20th century and now 21st century idea of what zombies are, largely shaped by the work of none other than George Romero, boy from like Queens or some shit that had a dream about a bunch of dead guys coming back and storming a few places. So it's
storming
interesting to go
so slowly.
Very slowly. We're talking a barnyard house. We're talking a freaking mall, all that kind of business. They're storming them quite slowly. So you have like an idea of like what the zombie is.
Yes.
So this was why I wanted to do this one, because I've been watching a few zombie movies recently. I did watch, a rewatch of Dawn of the Dead not too long ago. So zombies are on the brain, but hopefully not literally, because that's one of their favorite things to eat from what we understand about zombies in this day and age. So I was curious to see like what they were like back then. And it turns out in this movie, the zombie is not at all what we would now consider to be a zombie.
Yes.
This is a movie where like this mad undertaker is restored by a...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Potion and comes back from the dead. And he has like this all-consuming need for a little thing called blood.
Oh.
Like he is... It's more of a vampire movie, I would say.
Yeah, blending those two really iconic things, like coming back from the dead, a rare potion coming back. That's all zombie stuff, but not that he's like some weird, undead, grotesque thing feasting on flesh is strange.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, he's like, you know, he's played by this actor called Ian Keith, who I'd only seen recently in a movie called Nightmare Alley, another great noir film that was recently released by Criterion Collection. And it's like noir meets magician type thing.
Yes.
And he kind of has like a Mandrake the Magician vibe about him, the way that he dresses, wearing a cape and a little top hat. And he's quite like this mysterious figure in this movie of this man who's come back from the dead and very sinister and control, has a lot of power. And I found him absolutely fascinating to watch. Like, I just really was drawn to his characterization. And a little fun fact about this movie, this is a movie directed by a director called Philip Ford, who's got a very famous uncle whose name is John Ford, one of the most famous filmmakers in the history of cinema. And he's made a lot of B pictures like this kind of thing across all genres and stuff. But this might be his most well-known one. And this one also runs at around 59 minutes. And there's just something a little bit about it. And I was looking at some other people's reviews on Letterboxd and, you know, not many people enjoyed it. But I gotta tell you, this Ian Keith guy, I'm a fan, man. I might be his biggest fan of the 21st century.
Oh my God, I'm so diving in. I love that. And especially if we're talking about magnetic presences and that being like a big tick as what makes some of these old silver screen gems, like, and silver scream gems, worth revisiting. I love that. I'm so excited to check it out. But I have to tell you, this is a perfect segue because we've gone from The Valley of the Zombies, which you say has like a weird conception of what zombie things are.
Mm.
Now, if I was to say to you that a film in 1957 was called She-Devil, what is that immediate picture that you're getting in your mind, Alexi Toliopoulos? What are you thinking?
Well, there's a Roseanne Barr movie that is called something like She-Devil or something like that.
Besides
and
Roseanne.
That is the That's exactly what pops up in my head.
Hi, this is Robin Leach, and I'm here at the luxurious home of the super glamorous romance writer, Mary Fisher. She's the woman who has everything. Beauty, fame.
My books reflect my own experience of lovemaking as sacred and beautiful.
And plenty of hired help.
I bet she makes you earn every penny, huh?
But could it be that something is missing from this romantic storybook world?
Oh, the little families, mummies and daddies and dear little children. How lucky they are.
To see how the other half lives, meet Ruth Patchett, a domestic demon.
Your father loves mushroom soup.
Queen of a suburban paradise.
I'm in a barf.
The woman is a walking disaster area.
What could these two women possibly have in common?
But then maybe something like Bedazzled with Liz Hurley.
Yes.
Where we've kind of got like very femme fatale version of Satan,
of course.
Tempting man with the, you know, all of that kind of like sexual illustriousness.
Which is exactly what I would have thought. But if you check out this beautiful disc and the beautiful poster that is on the third disc, now our spy number 56, it says, female monster, they created an inhuman being who destroyed everything she touched.
How long before it'll take effect? 6 hours.
Only 6 hours. And a beautiful girl on the precipice of death, brought back to normal health, suddenly, miraculously.
Now, this 1957 film, it was originally played on a double bill with Kronos, funnily enough. It's based on a story called The Adaptive Ultimate. Now, what it's about is this guy named Dr. Dan Scott, he develops a serum that starts to cure the ills of animals, and he decides that he needs to maybe and potentially use that on Mary Blanchard's Kyra Zealous, who's the main character of this movie. Now, in the beginning of the movie, she's dying of some horrendous disease, which basically means, if you're talking 1957, some really awful makeup that makes her look horrifically blotchy and a terrible wig. And they give her this serum, and she bounces back and starts to have qualities of some of the animals that are in this serum. So, like, you find out the serum's like got some panther in it. She's got feline energy. It's got chameleonic tendencies. She can change her hair color. And so, what it sounds like maybe some cool thing like Species or, you know, something like that. It's not
cat people or the Wasp Woman, something like that.
No, it ends up being this weird kind of, I don't know, like anti-feminist allegory that all women, when imbued with some weird power, are going to use it for like feminine achievement in this like 1957, very white, very American middle class paradigm. So she starts to, she goes and robs a department store because she's poor and she's never been able to buy nice clothes. She does away with the wife of a really rich guy so she can become his woman, and starts to then like seduce the doctors and, you know, get on them to try and like allow her to stay alive and to still, you know, anyone who gets in her way, she basically does away with. And so she ends up just murdering a few folk. So in its brief 77 minutes, it's kind of got some cool stuff, but at the same time, this is one of my lesser enjoyable ones out of this batch, because I was like, apart from pure fascination that, wow, look at this expression of fear when it comes to like this next wave of feminism happening and people like proposing that if women have any kind of power, supernatural or otherwise, they'll just use it to enhance their feminine wiles and climb up the social ladder. But it's also pretty limiting too, because I was like hoping for when you give a woman a superpowered serum and she goes crazy and you call it She-Devil, that she's actually going to do some pretty big stuff. But she doesn't in that necessarily. But like I said, a fascinating, if you want a like 77 minute really great snapshot of this kind of weird expressive like fear of feminism in a kind of supernatural way, She-Devil is a go-to. Like, it is essential.
Okay, interesting. And this one's got a couple of special features on that, on attached to She-Devil as well, that I would wonder if they would give some sort of context to the film as well.
So again, another thing called the Miraculous Serum from a series called The Tales of Tomorrow was also adapted by adapted from the Adaptive Ultimate, and that it was made in 1952. So that's on this disc, which is kind of a cool comparison. And there was also a radio anthology episode. So you actually have got some comparisons of how the story was adapted, which is kind of cool. So
that's interesting.
There are some good ones that are on there too. But speaking of, when you, I believe you were talking about in The Return of the Ape-Man about these sort of lesser quality things, and it's funny where they focus their attention on. The final film we're talking about on this is again another 77-minute one called The Unknown Terror.
Now you'll see the incredible motion picture record of the steel-nerved men who crawl down the dangerous corridors of the Cave of Death to find a terror greater than any ever seen on land or sea or sky. The unknown terror beneath the earth.
It's basically about a group of explorers who are searching for a missing man, come across something called the Cave of the Dead. And it's filled with this oozing parasitic fungi that it basically creates a race of monster men. And
oh my lord, this is one that I'm interested in.
Now, what is so cool about this is they have spared no expense on this frothing cave in this movie. And so many things where things like breeze by and other things, they want to breeze by poor production design. Man, they take every ladder step, every walking through this, every element of this cave, every bit of exploration, beautiful integration of matte paintings. They just love the space in this cave. It is such a really well-directed thing. Charles Marquise Warren is the director. Again, has a stack of things on his resume, but I really like checking this out because with when I was watching it, because he's, you know, he did a lot of television shows like Gunsmoke. He did World War II war footage and things like that. Very, very inventive director, because like the integration of matte paintings and light and and this oozing cave and using this and these weird monsters in the unknown terror. Another kind of cool one that came through. And again, that whole, if you like this whole, like, we go to an exotic location, there are local tribespeople that are trying to turn you away. It's almost that inversion of like going back to that weird, creepy town where there's something odd in like the London Hammer horrors. In the silver screen, we go to these provincial places that have like colonial settlements and there's something weird with the local tribes people. So look, I had a fun time with this one because I was just fascinated with the direction and the style, because I was like, oh, they're clearly spent a lot of, whatever money that was spent on this movie was spent on this oozing, frothing cave to create monster people. So that was that one. That were, they were my big highlights of that.
Wow. I gotta watch this one. This one speaks to me. The Unknown Terror. I gotta go into that one.
Yeah, I think you're gonna have a really fun time with that one. Look, this has been another loaded Imprint Companion, the third of our July batch that we're covering. Silver Screams Cinema. This has been a treat. Like, this is, again, for those real cinephiles out there, if you're talking about batch worthiness, this is a great one because everything looks, you know, is done in blistering clarity. Mm. They're only short. So if you're kind of checking out some things that, like, I don't know, me and Alexi and I were recording this from Sydney, so we're both in lockdown. I really had fun, like, motoring through some very quick and brisk, well-told stories. I think it's an undervalued talent, and especially yes. at the turn of 1945 when things were still very much serialized and people were going to theaters for their news. You know, an hour running time is a common thing, and they just, like, told it like a bit an episode of Prestige TV, and so it's just like, bang, done. It's actually quite a relief.
Absolutely. There's something so charming about going back to, like, 1940s and 50s genre pictures, those B movies. It's an inextricable quality about them where you're just like, oh, they're really going for something. They don't have much to go with, but they're really going for something with it. And I was absolutely charmed by this box set, and I can't wait to keep delving further into it.
We have so much more to look forward to on upcoming Imprint Companion podcast. We have, I mean, a massive Directors Month that is coming up next month. So we are super excited to share everything that, I mean, I'm freaking out about that Directors Month, not only because we're getting new releases of films that have been on other labels that are now out of print. That's coming up in August, but then we have the incredible, that was the August box set. Now it's looking more like September. That includes Double Jeopardy, As Good As It Gets, Drugstore Cowboy, Chinese Box, Days of Heaven, and Straight Story, which is a...
Oh, wow.
Wow. And then, of course, what's even more thrilling and exciting is the incredible first time on Blu-ray for a bunch of things, the Collaborations box set that is coming out from the cinema of Zhang Yimou and Gong Li, which is equally as insane, also coming out in mid-September. Alexi, I'm freaking out about both of these.
It's kind of crazy because that next batch is huge with some huge directors in there like David Lynch and Terrence Malick. Then the next September release bundle has got like the Ipcress File trilogy of Michael Caine films.
Yes.
And then also like a Carry On box set, the first Australian movie in Imprint, which is the Ned Kelly film starring Mick Jagger.
Yes.
It's kind of low. It's like we've got a loaded couple of months coming towards us with Imprint, plus Space 1999, the TV series, as part of Imprint TV.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming, and we really are doing you a service here by watching all of these things before we talk with you about them, everybody.
One thing we can guarantee also in the next batch is we will have a special episode exclusively dedicated to Double Jeopardy featuring none other than the greatest fan of Double Jeopardy in the entire world and universe, the Australian Centre of the Moving Image curator, author, and host of Josie and the Podcats, Maria Lewis, will be here because there is literally nobody in the world that I would rather have, short of Ashley Judd and Bruce Beresford, on the show talking about it. So that will be great. Alexi, in the meantime, my friend, where can people find your gorgeous and dulcet tones?
You can hear my dulcet tones talking about films over at Total Reboot at the moment. We are doing a mini-series all about cuisine on screen, food movies, or gore movies, as I've been calling them recently. And the episode that's coming out this week, probably the same day as this, is me, Mitch Orr, who's one of the best chefs in the country.
Mitch is fascinating to listen to on this mini-series, by the way. And also, last week you did Tampopo, before you give us a preview of that, and I have never had such ramen cravings. I'm just dying for some ramen. And I don't know if in my area ramen is available. And it's just, it's killing me, Alexi. It's killing me.
Oh, you got to make your own then, dude. We've got to put some recipes up there. But the one coming out today is Mitch and I joined by my dearest friend and co-host of the Big Film Buffet, Jen Fricker,
yes,
to talk about Nora Ephron's Julie and Julia.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I am a huge Nora Ephron fan. One of my favorite filmmakers of all time since I was a young boy. She was one of the first filmmakers I ever knew about by name. And I love this movie so much. And we have the most fun talk about, you know, finally getting to talk about freaking Meryl Streep on Total Reboot. We found a way to do it.
You finally, finally got there. And guys, you're going to listen to this and then like within 24 hours or so, you're going to hear the 17th episode of Zodiac Chronicle. An absolutely loaded one. We have arrived at the point in Zodiac where we are talking about the direct conversation between the investigators of Zodiac and Dirty Harry. Holy shitballs, this is an exciting episode. A few of the guests that are going to be coming up are people like Clay Keller, people like Sean Burns, people like Danny Bowes, and of course, James Vanderbilt and the great, the one and only John Carroll Lynch coming back for a little bit to talk about everything Zodiac on that. And so, really looking forward to that. Everything's shaping up. And yeah, Alexi and I are excited because the great Clay Keller is, of course, the host of Screen Drafts. And you know what?
My favorite film podcast that Blake and I are not part of.
You might want to just keep listening. That's what I can say. I think you might just want to keep listening because there may be something that Alexi and I have some good news to share about with something like that very soon.
Okay. I'm not privy to this yet, so I'm going to keep myself on my own toes.
Alexi's playing coy. Alexi's playing super coy right now. But guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you on another episode of Imprint Companion or A Serious Disagreement, our other physical media podcast, very, very soon. Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.